아래 나들이 저기 한 제름을 치기 산유 좀낸 뒤에 송시비기 안데 이제 송럽들이야 퇴섬 검섬지 두째여도 안 될라 때네 산유 좀낸 뒤에 세디 아니 지금 고 고려 찬나 배제 성배기 견바지 고로 외여 봐 안데 지금 이제 구이 연대 다 안에 송구 연대 안에 송사지 송디 최리기 앞에 송년바 안 시시 니버여 봐 대신 산지 송 송시비 최리 년년 제바이나 당하고 타바다 탐지 진벽고 보나 톱투구여 봐 네게 산지 송 대산지 좀 된디게 투기 안에 지게 연대 대최 간지시네 원숨도 세대 뒤숨다 마음바다 다다와다 대바다 看到 Melba, Chita, I should do she, Sigi, and Sanji, and Dujalia, and Chesun Ares, says that Denis Song, Denis Sanji, Kusum, Tusum, and then the Ki, and do Jay on them. And the Jigger Susaya, Chick, and Gawaki, and the Sanji, Chesu Yirata, and Deva Shu Chungata, and Della Denis Susaran, oh, that didn't. 지상이 점년되기 송려 최선 검순 제라와 빼면서 약골에 세단 가와당 뽑아게야 낸 전류지게다 딩 상이에게 송셔베 냠는 나신지 이 수신도 제기 제제는 상요고화 토바 지긴 샘비게 아니야 전류를 해봐면 봐디 용 중구도 세세 어디 걸마 맞지 디지 디슈로
그 송이네 공 상이에게 두기 연선 대공 두숨기 옆에 참아기
뒤숨기 캠바 칸나 메바 삼바 지다와 주는 캔도 송바를 했어 지루하다
So this morning, we in the preceding verses, we looked at how Chogyam Rinpoche was reflecting on the qualities of the Buddha, and he did so through having studied and reflected and meditated intensely on the Buddha's teachings. He came to see that the Buddha himself, when he was an ordinary being, it was through receiving the same teachings, reflecting on those same teachings, and meditating on those same topics, that he attained, he arose as a Buddha, he became enlightened, and thereby attain the qualities of a Buddha's body, a Buddha's speech, and a Buddha's mind. And we heard reference to the qualities of the Buddha's body, including the marks and signs of a Buddha's body. Moreover, there was reference to the qualities of a Buddha's speech, in particular the eloquence and also the unique power of a Buddha's speech. And also there was reference to the mental qualities of a Buddha. For example, that the Buddha knows directly all phenomena at all times. He knows the past, the present, and the future. And also with his omniscience, he knows the individual personalities of all beings. So this coming, all this coming to mind for Chogyam Rinpoche causes great joy in his mind to arise. And moreover, it leads to great strength of mind. And the strength of mind comes about through his understanding of dependence arising, in that through himself, Chogyam Rinpoche himself, continuing to make great endeavors in hearing teachings, reflecting and meditating on them, he, just like Buddha Shakyamuni, will also achieve the ultimate result, the result of enlightenment. And thereby, with this great strength of mind, he made set out with ever greater endeavor in the accomplishment of virtue.
And
moreover, this morning we looked at how everything the Buddha taught was taught motivated so that beings could attain liberation from suffering, so that beings could generate within themselves the mental paths of liberation. And he taught in accordance with the varying dispositions and inclinations of beings, and therefore his teachings can be divided in accordance with the three differing capacities of beings. Moreover, he also taught the Mahayana Dharma, where he emphasized the cultivation of love and compassion leading to the generation of bodhicitta, as well as the wisdom realizing emptiness. So therefore, knowing how the Buddha has taught the complete and unmistaken path to enlightenment, and he taught it in accordance with the capacities of beings, we can have confidence that through training in these skillful methods, we will quickly attain the ultimate result, the result of enlightenment. We'll continue with the text in here. Then we come to a part where Jaya Rinpoche, now having praised the teachings as being wondrous, he now expresses that with the Buddha having taught in accordance with the varying personalities of beings, some beings then reading the teachings of the Buddha or receiving teachings of the Buddha Dharma became confused by the differing presentations. So many followers of the Buddha, especially at that time, were quite confused about the correct understanding of the teachings of the Buddha Dharma. In fact, they had mixed up the varying different tenets, philosophical tenets, and therefore had come to a mistaken understanding. So Jaya Rinpoche struggled to develop trust in some of the teachings that he was receiving. So he referred back to the Indian masters, to the commentaries that Indian masters had composed, masters such as Nagarjuna and Chandrakirti and Asanga. Now the 46th verse. Whilst this excellent system is marvelous, those people who are not learned in it, in every respect entangle themselves, just like plaited bulbasaur grass.
And the other men do chuma yi se de, this one goes. That the other men do chuma yi se de, sanje jemnen de ge sun shebi ge che de, da one chike pe masi ge.
In this first line, Jaya Rinpoche then is stating very clearly that the Buddha, there's nothing greater, there's nothing more marvelous than the Buddha Dharma itself, because the Buddha Dharma and the Buddha Dharma alone shows the complete and unmistaken path to liberation from suffering, the complete and unmistaken path to enlightenment.
Mm-hmm. 동요
The first line refers then to how marvelous the Buddha Dharma or this excellent system is. So why is this being specifically mentioned? Why is the Buddha Dharma said to be marvelous? Why is it said that there's nothing greater than the Buddha Dharma? Well, the Buddha is being praised here by Chö Rinpoche because the way not just what the Buddha taught, but also the way the Buddha taught. Because as we've heard, the Buddha taught in accordance with the varying personalities of beings. And therefore there were the three wheel turnings, he taught the sutras and the tantras, and they taught some differences. And this was because there's a wide variety of predispositions amongst beings. So for those who it's usually expressed as of being of the greatest intelligence or sharpest faculty, but another way to express it perhaps is that for those who could accept that phenomena lack inherent existence completely, he taught to them the wisdom realizing emptiness. And for those who could also accept bodhicitta and the six perfections, he taught this to them. So to some beings, he taught the complete path to enlightenment, the practices of the wisdom realizing emptiness, bodhicitta, and the six perfections. But to those who would not be able to accept such teachings, who would be repelled by such teachings, he rather taught selflessness, the view of selflessness, and that a liberation from samsara, from cyclic existence, is possible. But he didn't go on to talk about bodhicitta and the six perfections. But for others, to whom hearing such teachings would have been difficult for them to relate to such teachings, and perhaps would have rejected such teachings. The Buddha just taught about how to achieve a good rebirth in their very next life, how to not fall into the lower realms in the next life. So he taught the practice of ethical conduct, generosity, patience, joyous perseverance, and the need for stainless prayers. So we can see here that the Buddha gave different teachings to different audiences in accordance with their own predispositions and inclinations. And moreover, though, because he also guided beings through these varying stages. So as beings were first started to accept one level of teaching, as they trained and gathered faith and skill, they would later be exposed to a higher level of teaching. And in this way, they could progressively train in the varying stages of the path. And so, and if we summarize the differences, we can say in the terms of the view, there was great difference here. To some students, the Buddha taught that phenomena exist truly. To some, he taught external phenomena do exist in the way that they appear. To others, he taught no phenomena exist truly. Phenomena lack inherent existence, lack true existence. So, in terms of view, there is quite some variety in the teachings of the Buddha. But whomever the Buddha was teaching, he always taught ethics, generosity, patience, and joyous perseverance. In other words, he taught how to accumulate merit, because it's through the accumulation of merit, in particular these four practices, that good rebirths are attained, and that one develops, and through on the basis of greater merit, one will be able to develop subtler understandings of the Buddha Dhamma. So in terms of the method side of practice, there was not great difference. But in terms of the view side of practice, there was variety in what the Buddha taught. And this, though, and this is a unique characteristic of the Buddha, of how he skillfully guided beings in accordance with their own personalities, their own predispositions. And for those who were ready, the Buddha was alone in teaching the ultimate view, which is that nothing exists inherently. But that doesn't mean phenomena are non-existent. Phenomena exist as mere imputations by mind, or only as imputations by mind. And here, the Buddha was alone in teaching this view, the union or the harmony of dependent arising and emptiness. And he taught that. Not only was he unique in teaching this view, but he also only taught it to those for whom were ready to receive such a teaching.
Nipola
Kepa Mampo Yore, yini kunsi di dhonda yapo chung ma song, di re.
Ma xing wa di chetan, ma xing pa dine mongo chung wa resgo.
Di ko song, dine de ma song gong la kirang tenpa ni dang tenro ki namshak.
Chetan, tenpa ni ki namshak yapo ha mogo wa resgo.
Dine.
Kunzo tenpa da dindan tenpi ki namshak, sa yi song na la tenri ki namshak, tenyi namshak song wa di ki, chetan tenri ki niswa yapo ha mogo wa mongo chung wa resgo.
Now looking at, and so this is why the Buddha Dharma is being praised as marvelous, because of that the Buddha is alone in having taught the ultimate view, and moreover it's being praised for the way that he taught it in accordance with the dispositions of beings. And but then we come to the second line. Well, maybe for us we'll read the two together. Whilst this excellent system is marvelous, those people who are not learned in it, maybe better to say those who are not skilled in it, or who are unskilled in it. So this refers to that in the Buddha Dharma, the Buddha taught, as we've just heard, the presentation of the view in accordance with the dispositions of beings, of the beings before him at that time. So there are, in the sutras, there are different presentations in regard to the two truths, with regard to conventional truth and ultimate truth, as well as differing presentations in terms of the meaning of dependent arising. Then at the in Tibet, there were many beings, many practitioners, who read the Buddha Dharma, but they didn't clearly understand the presentation on the two truths, presentations on dependent arising. And they mixed up and got confused about the differing presentations and came to faulty conclusions. So this is what is being referred to, those who are not learned or those who are unskilled in it, refers to those who are unskilled in the Buddha Dharma, but in particular in relation to the view and the view of the two truths and the dependence and dependence arising, those who have misunderstood the ultimate meaning or the final meaning of the Buddha's presentation. So this is really referring to at the time of Jerenpoche, when he was abiding in the world. Then in Tibet there were many had studied extensively the teachings of the Buddha, but hadn't come to understand his view well. They had a mistake or were confused in terms of the view of the Buddha. But we can't say that before Jerenpoche came into Tibet that there was only confusion in Tibet. And also in India, there were those who would have had mistaken understandings of the presentation of the Buddha.
Mm. Mangbura chik chuche, ane songshia se wada.
Reading on, in every respect entangle themselves just like plaited Bellwether grass. So this then is referring to these practitioners who are not learned or skilled in the teachings of the Buddha. And this isn't because they perhaps didn't make any effort, but rather they'd come to a mistaken understanding, mistaken conclusions. They thought they'd understood the ultimate view of the Buddha, but there was contradictions, there was lack of clarity in their understanding. So these beings then, these practitioners, who have confusion in their minds, are being likened in the last line here to plaited Bellwether grass. So Bellwether grass is a grass where the blade of the grass as well as the roots are all entangled and mixed up, and they grow together in a clump, and it would be very difficult to separate the two. So what we're seeing with this analogy is that in the same way, if someone was trying to separate the blade of grass from the root and would struggle to do so because it just comes together as a clump, likewise these practitioners who've tried to understand the correct view of reality, their minds are all confused and mixed up as opposed to what exists, what doesn't exist, how things exist, or whether anything exists at all. Their views are all mixed up and entangled as well, just like this grass.
So
in every respect, so, you know, the view is entirely entangled or mixed up, just like this grass. So this, if you're interested, you can find it on the internet. There's pictures of it. It's called something else, which I can't pronounce, Eleusine Indica. Anyway, it is, does exist in the world, and the pictures on the internet. So amongst those who didn't understand the two truths correctly, there were those who accepted that phenomena were empty of inherent existence, were empty of true existence. And when they investigated and they looked for the inherently existent phenomenon, and they found it doesn't exist, it's empty of inherent existence, they then made a mistake thinking, emptiness, that is inherently existent, or that is truly existent. So they accepted that phenomena lack true existence. But they believed that emptiness, that existed truly. So there they made their mistake, and they made this mistake because when they looked for inherently existent objects, they couldn't find it. And all that's left is emptiness. And then they accepted emptiness as existing inherently. Furthermore, there are those who believe that one only needs to practice, for example, Tantra one doesn't need to engage in the practice of the Mahayana, the sutra paths. So the Mahayana Dharma has these two parts of sutra and tantra, and there are those who believe one can attain the final goal just through practicing tantra, no need for sutra. But then there were also others who said, no need for tantra, just practicing sutra on its own is sufficient to achieve the final goal. So these are illustrations of people at the time who were not learned or were unskilled in the Buddhist teachings, thinking that instead of understanding correctly that one needs to engage in both sutra and tantra in practice in order to attain enlightenment, they thought only one was necessary. And there were others who misunderstood the view of emptiness. Seeing these contradictions in the presentations that were being taught at the time in Tibet, seeing the confusion in these presentations, Jerenpache, he had no trust or conviction in these presentations, because he could see the contradiction, he could see that they hadn't come to the final intent of the
Buddha.
The advice that Jerenpache is giving to us in this verse is that the Buddha Dharma that Buddha Shakyamuni taught is not only incomparable and marvelous, but is both vast and truly profound. And to come to a correct meaning, in particular a correct meaning that will have a transformative effect on one, one mustn't make the mistake of thinking, oh, I can just hear a few teachings, get some general understanding, think, yeah, I've got it, and now I just need to meditate on it. One needs to study well, receive many teachings, reflecting on these over an extended period, meditating on them. In this way, one will come to the correct understanding. So one needs to, through the process of receiving many teachings and reflecting on them, one will take one's understanding to deeper levels, and the slight misunderstandings will be cleared away. Doubts will arise, and then they will be cleared away. So this is the process to follow. If one, though, receives a few teachings, thinks one has understood it, and that is sufficient in terms of one's receiving of teachings, one will have mistakes in one's view. One will be confused about the correct view. And one will end up like this bulbasaur grass, where everything is entangled and there's no clarity.
진주 인자 산예 좀년디게 가르스나 바래래네 산예 좀년여 코라 나고 퇴삼 곰숨제 냠는제 아니 냠는제네 아니 냠는제디 차사 하고 어디 냠용이 토네 안 도시마 나설이야 최소와래 와서 그래 어디 나신 알아서 이네 산예 좀년디게 취 진주제 원 진주제도 산예 좀년디게 송디베 최대 최대리아 당고 퇴바망고 퇴 되네 된다래 야나야도 삼당 되네 소소라랑기 곰 냠는 공제 되는 소속이 냠냠 치료도 어디 다 처벌을 해야도 제마 지게 직제비니 안도시네 세베나 안에 반도 친구 그래서 안 순거로
what we as followers of the Buddha what we are being encouraged to do is to train our minds in exactly the same way as Buddha Shakyamuni did in his lifetimes prior to arising as a Buddha. He too received many teachings and continued to reflect on those teachings, eventually meditating on those teachings. And in this way, he trained his mind. In this way, he practiced. So this is how Buddha Shakyamuni trained. And then eventually, when he came to correct understandings, he then was ready to share his knowledge. And likewise, the great masters of the past, for them to compose texts in a way that was unmistaken, they too needed to receive teachings, reflect on them, and meditate on them, and do so repeatedly over an extensive period. And in this way, they were able to come to unmistaken understandings, and then compose texts that were in accordance with the final intent of the Buddha.
Depchik, Pesiro, Tonja, Law, and Lamsa, Dina, Yabai Tonja, Lamsa, Dele, Isisio, Sigio, Maresum, that's actually two in the law, the Dine Lamsa, Isimajevache, and the Ganesh in the Dick, Gimsa Samta, Jevache, and the Yane and Jevache, Gimsa Samta, Dijene, Dina, Disunsha, Dine, Ganes Chagre, Dim, Gimsa, Kares, Pa, Jevache, Jevache, or Samsa, Depti, Tik, Pesi Tonja, Dina, Disunsha, Dilesha, some big Isisha, Isisamashi, Jeshavena. And the
So what we're being advised against here is not to what we're being advised against is to think for ourselves. So for example, if you're reading a Dharma text, don't just accept what is presented in the text. Take that meaning, think about it. What is said there, does it make sense to me? Does it work in accordance with my own experience? What about in different circumstances? What's said here? Does this make sense? So in other words, we mustn't just readily accept what we read, but we must think about the meaning.
And
this isn't the case only for text, it's the same for receiving teachings. So I'm sharing my knowledge of the Buddha Dharma, and you must hear this and reflect on its meaning and think for yourself, does this make sense or not? And you should receive teachings from others as well and hear what they have to say and think for yourself and analyze and see if it makes sense, if it seems to be correct or not. So this is important. We need to develop our way of thinking, use our wisdom, use our intelligence, and analyze and investigate. Don't just accept what is said based on a name or a reputation.
Hmm.
And so this is exactly what Jaya Rinpoche himself did. He received teachings, he thought about the meaning, and when trust didn't come, or conviction in those teachings didn't arise, he investigated further, sought a correct and unmistaken understanding elsewhere. This is now the 47th verse. Upon seeing the situation, I diligently and continuously studied the words of scholars, repeatedly seeking your true intent. Look, in the first 2 lines, upon seeing the situation, I diligently and continuously studied. So here, Jaya Rinpoche is saying that coming to see that many teachers in Tibet at that time, they hadn't come to a correct understanding, or they'd come to an understanding that was confused and contradictory. Coming to see the situation well, what did he do? He engaged in intensive study of the various commentaries to the Buddha's teachings written by the great Indian masters such as Nagarjuna and Chandrakirti and Baba Vaveka. And he did so over a lengthy period of time and with great effort. He certainly didn't do it half-heartedly, but he strove to try and come to the ultimate meaning, or the final meaning, of the Buddha Dharma. He studied the works of scholars, repeatedly seeking your true intent. So here, this is Jaya Rinpoche showing how he came to the correct understanding of the middle way view, in that when he found that those teachers that he had met in Tibet did not possess the correct understanding, he sought out the correct view from the great scholars from India. And he did so repeatedly over a sustained period, studying and reflecting on these great commentaries. And in this way, he came to understand the middle way view.
Yamlin Digida,
and where we see her true intent. So this is referring specifically to the presentation on reality, on emptiness. So it's really referring to striving here repeatedly to understand the middle way view. That's primarily what he's engaging, not primarily engaging in coming to understand the cultivation of love and compassion and the generation of bodhicitta, but primarily the cultivation of the middle way view. If one reads the sutras of the Buddha or commentaries to them, we'll see that in some he says that phenomena exist inherently, they have their own nature by which they exist. But then in others the Buddha taught no phenomenon exists inherently at all. So it appears contradictory. Or in some teachings he taught that phenomena are externally established, external phenomena exist. And in others he taught that phenomena are not externally established. So there are clear contradictions in terms of the view and how it's presented. So this is because the Buddha taught in accordance with the individual disposition and inclination of those before him at the time. So therefore, because of these apparent contradictions, it's difficult to understand quickly what is the correct view. And the way then that Jerenpuche came to understand the Buddha's intent, the way he came to understand the middle way view, was through relying primarily on Jerenpuche read the commentaries written by a vast array of Indian masters, and he came to see that the presentation of Buddha Palita and Chandrakirti, that they were able to clearly present the middle way view. It was Buddha Palita and Chandrakirti who taught that phenomena do not exist inherently, but are mere imputations by mind. And it was through presentation of these two great Indian masters who were clearly making clear the difference between the two sub-schools of the middle way view, the sub-school of the autonomous, the Svatantika, and the consequentialist, the Prasangika. It was these two Indian masters who made clear the distinction between the two sub-schools of the middle way school, that Jayampushe was able to come to an understanding of the Buddha's intent. And it was through studying these texts that he was also able to understand that in other teachings from the Buddha, at some points Buddha was teaching from the point of view of the mind-only school, the Chittamatrans, in others from the Svatantika's view, and in others from the Prasangika view. So this is how Jerome Boucher came to understand the Buddha's intent.
And the Gomba Yan, the Gomba Tadu Umetawa said, the Chetamje Rashi Majuba, Chetamje Rashi Majuba, Yinaya, Chetamje, and Pa Lupa, Topi, Ta Lupa, Shaba, some Yuba, said, and the Gomba Tadu, the Gomba Dirwa, Sisandi Uma Tanubi, Tawa Tadu, Chetamje Rashi Majuba, Redi, Yinaya, and the Rashi, Taxin Jibet, and Mora Shi Majuba.
Jinpachi then came to understand the Buddha's true intent, the final view, which is that all phenomena lack inherent existence. No phenomenon exists inherently, but it's merely imputed by mind. And this is the final view. It's the final, ultimate view of the Prasangika. So here what Jerome Boucher came to realize is that when one investigates, searches for a phenomenon to see if it exists in the way that it appears, one comes to see it's empty of existing in the way that it appears. But if one doesn't investigate, the phenomenon is there. And this shows that it does still exist. And how? Just as an imputation by mind. And this then is the final view, the ultimate view of the Prasangika. So Jerome Boucher came to understand the final intent of the Buddha, which is the Prasangika view. And the final view of the Prasangika then is this view which is the harmony of emptiness and dependence arising. There are other philosophical tenets They certainly have their own final view, their own ultimate view that was based on the teachings from the Buddha. But that is the view of these other tenets is not the final view according to the Buddha. It's the final view according to their tenet, but not the ultimate view or the final view, because it's only the Prasangika's view which is the unmistaken view, and therefore the true Buddha's the true intent of the Buddha. So whilst the other philosophical schools have their own final view, that is mistaken and is therefore not the final view of the Buddha. So for example, the Chittamatrans, the mind-only school, so they believe that phenomena are truly existent. And why do they say that phenomena are truly existent? Because they say phenomena arise independent on causes and conditions. Therefore they exist, and they exist truly. So the Chittamatrans, their final view, asserts true existence. And their reason is that because phenomena are dependent on causes, arise dependent on causes and conditions, they must exist and exist truly. The Svatantika, though, their final view, the Madhyamika Svatantika, their final view is a little different. So they will also say that Chittamatrans are wrong, but what they present as the final view is that all phenomena are empty of true existence, but are inherently existent. So the Chittamatrans say phenomena are truly existent. Svatantika say that's mistaken, they are not truly existent, but they are inherently existent. And the difference being, phenomena do not exist by way of their own nature, so therefore they are not truly existent, but they are imputed by mind, therefore they are inherently existent. So they assert that phenomena are inherently existent because they can be imputed by mind, or they are imputed by mind. Then the Prasangikas say, no, you're both wrong. You're getting closer, but you're not there yet. Prasangikas say, true existence, inherent existence, same thing. No phenomenon exists truly or inherently. But phenomena are merely imputed by mind. But that doesn't mean they are inherently existent. And that is where their difference is with the Svatantika. So both the Svatantika and the Prasangika, these two sub-schools of the middle way school, they say phenomena do not exist truly. And they both say phenomena are imputed by mind. But then the Svatantika, they say because phenomena are imputed by mind, they exist inherently. And Prasangika say they do not exist inherently, although they are imputed by mind. And that is the final view of the Buddha, the Buddha's intent, the ultimate view of the Prasangika, that no phenomenon exists truly or inherently, but phenomena exist as mere imputations by mind.
Ba tuasam gomsum je jeba samda then lama uma balya kenhi shubi nyamlin chigurwa da jiza lama uma balya jizun jembe yang shi sigo res ane jizun jembe yang shi sigo res lama uma batela jiza jirum chigi lama uma balya shu lama uma bigi jizun jembe yang la shu shen jizun jembe yang di kato lama uma bigi jizun jembe yang da jirum chigi marbala le kiyu na shin jizu du shin ane nga tuki.
Kong Tan Chi Pere.
Lamu Chi Pere, Lamu Mabagi, Chizin Jembe, and Shesigore. Shesigore, Kame Nayaragore. Chizan Lamu Mabagi, Chizin Jembe, and Yahugore, Shuni Chizin Jembe, and Lamu Mabala, Lamu Mabagi, and my Chizin Sugore. Chizan Joana, Yaki, 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 Yaki,
So when Mamakampapa was training in the cultivation of the middle way view, he was doing so in reliance on a teacher called Lama Umapa, with Uma being the middle way, and Umapa means practitioner of the middle way. So this was the name of Jerem Pache's teacher. And Lama Umapa was guiding Jerem Pache in how to meditate on emptiness. And Lama Umapa, he has direct visions of Manjushri, and Manjushri would tell Lama Umapa how Lama Umapa must train and guide Jerem Pache. So Lama Umapa was acting as you could say as the translator between Manjushri and Lama Tsongkhapa, and this was the way that Lama Tsongkhapa trained in the correct view. So despite relying on Lama Umapa, who was in direct contact with Manjushri, Jerem Pache was struggling to come to a correct understanding of the final view. Then Jerem Pache himself had a direct vision of Manjushri. And Manjushri said to Lama Tsongkhapa, the reason you are not yet able to understand the subtle view, come to the subtle understanding of emptiness, is because you lack merit. You need to accumulate far more virtue. Without a sufficient virtue, without sufficient merit, you will not attain a realization of emptiness. So with this direct instruction from Manjushri, Lama Tsongkhapa went into retreat, where he made a vast number of mandala offerings and prostrations to the 35 Buddhas and other practices to accumulate huge stores of virtue in order to realize emptiness. And this is also what is meant in our second line, where Jerem Pache refers to how he diligently and continuously studied, or here we can maybe say trained. The word I've translated as studied is literally followed. So, but we can understand it here as he intentionally engaged in accumulation of virtue so as to realize emptiness.
Namcha tatu de yahu, Hapovalia, Anichigi, Jeva Jeva Chigugi, Jeva Janya, Jeva Samji, Dotuya Kabochi, Sarachis, and Dini Yumdu, and Jing Sunum Sayat, Chi Sudum Suyare, Anichi, Chibi Yamlencia, and Mazugu, Nitipa Shaya, Tondalia, Anichi, Cha Tea, Conjolia, Chebu Puyata, Dinichi Sunum, you taught it past. Chick
So what we should come to understand from this is that in order to gain realization of emptiness, one has to meditate on emptiness, but if one solely meditates on emptiness, one will not realize emptiness. One has to also accumulate merit. And this is because one needs to accumulate the two accumulations, the accumulation of merit as well as accumulation of wisdom. When one is engaging in the meditation on reality, on the meditation on how phenomena exist, when one's meditating on emptiness, one is accumulating the accumulation of wisdom. But in order to attain the actual realization of emptiness, one also needs accumulation of merit so as to power those meditations. And therefore, when one is not meditating on emptiness, one needs to engage in accumulation of merit, such as making prostrations, practicing generosity, engaging in purification practices, etc. There are a vast array of varying methods to accumulate merit. So in brief, these two need to be done together, both meditating on emptiness as well as accumulation of merit. So the meaning in brief of this verse then is that Jayamvishe made extensive efforts, and he made these efforts in both receiving teachings, reflecting and meditating on them, and not just receiving one teaching or reading one text and then accepting it, but rather receiving many teachings and reading many texts so as to come to a correct understanding. And to aid this arrival at a correct understanding, he didn't just study and reflect, he also engaged in the accumulation of merit through prostrations, mandala offerings and the like. And The lesson from Jerem Pushe to us in this verse is that in order to realize the final view, the ultimate view, one has to use analysis and investigation. And the way, though, to develop one's skill of analysis is twofold. On the one side, one has to receive a vast array of teachings and texts so that one can receive a vast array of teachings and read many texts, so one can use that as a basis for one's analysis and investigation, to aid one's deeper and deeper investigation. And one shouldn't limit oneself to the presentation just of one view. One needs to understand the varying tenets that the Buddha taught, and understand them in the sense of coming to see whether the views, say, of the Chittamatrans are correct, or if the views of the Chittamatrans are mistaken, why so? And one needs to come to realize this for oneself. Likewise with the Svatantika, one needs to come to understand the view and to see if the view is mistaken as it is said to be or not. One needs to see this for oneself. So this whole process is about developing one's wisdom, one's accumulation of wisdom, and sharpening one's reasoning. And in conjunction with this, then, one needs to, in conjunction with this, which is the accumulation of wisdom, one also needs to engage in the accumulation of merit. So this is very broad. It would include requesting supplications to one's Lama, with the four opponent powers, engaging in confession practice, accumulating virtue through prostrations or offerings and the like. And with these two together, the accumulation of merit, powering the accumulation of wisdom, one will come to realize the final view. So this is how Lama Tsongkhapa himself trained. And he trained in that way so as to realize the final goal, and he followed the example of all the great masters before him, and he set this as an example for his later students to follow as well. The personal advice then for us that's contained in this verse is that whatever we engage in, we should make this a practice of the Mahayana Dhamma, which means for something to be a practice of the Mahayana Dhamma, we have to have generated the mind of bodhicitta. So if we generate the mind of bodhicitta, we've generated the wish that all sentient beings are the same as myself in wanting to experience only happiness and to be freed of suffering. And moreover, I take it as my responsibility to ensure that sentient beings are separated from suffering and do experience lasting happiness. And how to do so? How to actually bring lasting happiness to others? Well, normal worldly activities will certainly bring some benefit to sentient beings, but that will not fulfill their innermost desire. Even if we were to give delicious, nutritious food to all beings in the world, that will not lead to them attaining lasting happiness. What sentient beings really need from us, what we really need to give to others, is to be able to train them in what the causes for happiness are and how to accomplish them, what the causes for suffering are and how to eliminate them. Because it's only through beings knowing that and then engaging in the cultivation by being skillfully guided that they can achieve a state of lasting happiness. But in order to be able to teach beings in accordance with their own individual personalities, we need to make great effort to arise as a Buddha ourselves. We need to eliminate all our own faults completely and develop all good qualities to their perfected level. It's only in that way that we will attain Buddhahood ourselves and be able to guide others in accordance with their personalities, just like the Buddha did. So just like the Buddha taught varying philosophical views in accordance with the varying predispositions of beings, for us to be such a skilled guide, we too need to perfect all our good qualities and eliminate all faults. And therefore, we need to strive to become a Buddha through receiving many teachings, reflecting on them, and meditating on them. So in this way, we generate mind of bodhicitta before engaging in any activities such as receiving a teaching or meditating. And we should also include the reflection on emptiness, that no phenomenon exists inherently at all, that all phenomena are empty of true existence. And it's through training in this way, the understanding of the mind of bodhicitta and the understanding of emptiness and engaging in the cultivation of the six perfections, that we too will become the most skilled of guides and be able to have the most meaningful impact on the lives of others through training them in a manner that's appropriate to their individual personalities.
Samu nāle jāyā dhīrē, jīmbē nyamzī namsān chāsān jēshā sīgīyō mārē, rūvātā samu nāle yā ngī gī tā jīnā sōsūgī gēvī jīgā lōngchūyā rōs kārī na xēn yā mī kio wūtāng xēn yā rō jīyīn sībē xēn jī gāngā sīyā dā xēn jī dī jī jūyā dāndā lā pā tāngīn sīmbē samdā yā dā. Ān jīg sōsūgī yā, sōsūgī sūnam sāyā dā gōngchūyā lī yā pūyīgīn sīmbē gī samdā yā dī samu nāle dī jāyā dā gā jā, jīmbē nyamzī sīdū, samu namsān, ji lamsa jesha ji sikyo marwa, ji na, ji samu nalaya, ji ngi da lanchungi tohne shenliya penpe zhuyaya, dan gongchulu chibu puyaya, da chadang kaang tu jiyin sembe samlo na. Sosu gi shenyuan dang, sosu gi lu gi, ani tohne shenliya penpe jawa kazi tu tu da zhugiyin sembe gi. Ani dini gi samdhu, samu di dini, chikiti na di jiyin sembe, samlo di yana, 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 da yadiri, da kaji jimbe nyamnin chesedi, di samdhaya re. Samlo de yana, jira, dine etawa, dine gedine, otati, di tanga du karali gora, sena nga zo, sena chung zhugora, sena, a tanga rangu shenda, chigi me sembe, sena de chung zhugora. Sena yuwangi nga zo liya, nyumma ba mangu shuji gora, ta nga lu gugudu, nge shuwa sa re, sena, nji, nga lu gugudu sena shenda zane, rahayage mangu tupshi gora, de sena di chigora. Jira, dine ki towe sepa, sosu gi dine jiyin sembe, da sosu gi, Tenigo sunum shasa sashi be kewadi ne, kewadi suine di devu digi di shodo, simjan tamjelo yong or jegin, simjale jegin simbigi, de yong shu simbi molam jab, dine sam daidi, samnudu siane yando yane yando daidi, jimbi nyamlensi or, jimbi nyamlensi or. Daya sutin nyamlensi di, ne luma yusum yukone, shala never saugin jigme, simbigi samnud yane yane yando yatang, tangu or, dine samnudi, is a dine sam daidi anjugi.
Just to talk about the perfections quickly. The first, that's of being of generosity. So here to emphasize that the practice of the perfections refers to mental development. And this is the case for all of them. So generosity, the practice of generosity means developing a generous attitude. It means developing a way of thinking. So the practice of generosity, if one says, I am engaging in the practice of generosity, this is my primary practice, it doesn't mean that that person should be giving away all their possessions or offering their body. It means they would be training in their way of thinking, developing their way of thinking. That is the meaning of practice. So in the meditation, they would meditate on the suffering of beings, generating a wish to alleviate their suffering, and generating the sincere wish that whatever they have, whatever they own, whatever material resources they have, may I give these to others and thereby free them from suffering. Whatever skills and talents I have, may I share these with others so as to free others from suffering. Whatever material resources others need that I don't have, may I attain these so that I can give to others. Whatever skills and abilities that others need that I don't have, may I develop these so I can benefit others. And likewise with the triple gem. In the meditation, we meditate on making vast offerings to the three jewels. But this is done in meditation, and in this way, we're developing our way of thinking. This is the meaning of practicing generosity. It's cultivating a generous attitude, a wish to utilize whatever resources we have, whether material or our inner resources, to bring benefit into the lives of others. And the purpose of this training is it counteracts the afflicted mind of miserliness, this afflicted mind from which so many problems come, because it's under the influence of miserliness that we don't help others when we can. It's under the influence of miserliness that we keep things to ourselves, whether it's material resources or our own inner qualities, that we don't need to keep to ourselves, that we can share with others. So through training in generosity, repeatedly over a sustained period, we will accumulate vast stores of virtue. And this virtue too is what we should be offering to others, because what others need are the causes for happiness. So here, as well as part of the training of generosity, we even give the causes for happiness to others. And similarly with the second perfection, that of ethics, ethical conduct. This, in brief, is an attitude or a mind that I will not bring harm to others. I will not allow myself to come under the influence of a mind that brings harm to others, and thereby I will ensure my physical behavior, my verbal behavior, does not bring harm to others. So the practice of ethical conduct, this too refers to developing a way of thinking, developing habituation to being ethical, to not bringing harm to others. And the third, that of patience. This is a mind that is undisturbed in the face of adversity, whether it's difficult encounters with others or our own inner turmoil. A mind that is patient is a mind that is undisturbed no matter what one encounters or what one experiences. So we know that this is a mind that is difficult to arise when we encounter an unwanted situation. And the reason that we have such limited success with patience in our daily life is because in meditation we have not yet gained sufficient habituation or familiarity with patience. If with patience, just like with ethics and generosity and any other mind of the Buddha Dharma, if we train in this repeatedly over a sustained period in meditation, then when we're not in meditation, when we encounter difficult circumstances, our habitual way of thinking will naturally arise, and our mind will stay undisturbed, no matter what we encounter. And this then is the case with joyous perseverance too. It's through developing familiarity, habituation, that the mind of joyous perseverance will naturally arise within us and remain manifest for lengthy periods of time. So we'll finish here then for this weekend. Still a few minutes left, so if you have some questions, then please.